Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You're listening to Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, our supportive husbands who've agreed to read along with us. Welcome to episode 2 of our Throne of Glass book club. Read along with us here as Lauren and Kyle experience the series for the first time, guided in discussion by myself and John as we reread the series together. It is one of our all-time favorites.
Yes. In this episode, we'll be discussing Throne of Glass, aka book 1 of the TOG series, chapters 17 through 35. And again, this is a book club style podcast, meaning there will be no spoilers for future chapters or books. So if you've only read the first 35 chapters of book 1, this is a safe space to process while we discuss.
Yes. So if you don't know why we are shell-shocked over what Selena just discovered under her bed, go read through chapter 35 and come back so we can talk about it. Additionally, we do want to give mild content warning. We'll be discussing themes from this book that include gruesome murders and witty innuendos. This episode will also include a name pronunciation guide, which I will need a refresher on myself. Connor will be providing that. A chapter recap from John, initial reactions from me and Lauren, and favorite moments and quotes from the chapters, and theories about what is yet to come.
And before we get started on all of that, make sure that you rate and review and follow our podcast. Make sure you're following us along on Instagram and TikTok for all the updates and all of our bookish related shenanigans. If you want more bonus content, early access, incredible community of other book lovers, weekly events, like Kyle's been running a new Dungeons and Dragons night every week, discounted merch. Oh my gosh, there's just a ton. Join our Patreon. We love our Patreon members, getting to know a smaller community of people and just getting to hang out with people who relate to us and love Sarah J. Maas. While you're checking out all our things, make sure you hop on over to betweenpagesandfriends.com and check out all of our merch. We are always adding new items and updating all of our links and things there. So make sure you stay connected.
One of our favorite things ever is seeing the messages that you guys write us at checkout. They always make our day. A recent one that we got from Raimi, who's also one of our newest Patreon members, she said, "I love your content on Instagram. The recaps of ACOTAR helped me process what I read. Thanks for helping fuel my rekindled love for books." Raimi, thank you for sharing this with us and for supporting our content. Our goals for this podcast, I mean, it's this exact thing that you told us, to create a space for you to process what you're reading, like you're just hanging out with some friends. So I also wanted to thank all of you who have been sending us a variety of peach rings and other peach candy. It has been so fun and delightful to get some extra sweet treats just for having like a terribly public sweet tooth. So thank you and keep them coming.
Yes, thank you so much. That seriously makes John's day every time we get anything in our P.O. box. It's the best thing ever. So here we go. We're going to dive right back into Rifthold. I'm going to start us off with an updated list of pronunciations. We are still pretty early in this series, so we'll go over a few main characters again and add all of the new words mentioned in chapters 17 to 35. Again, I'm reading these names the way they are pronounced in the audiobooks to the best of my ability, and these are the audiobooks read by the incomparable Elizabeth Evans. So first in this stretch of chapters, we have Sam Hewen, Samhain is basically Halloween. They call it the Day of the Dead. Kael describes it as a silly holiday to celebrate the coming of winter. So that is pronounced Samhain. We also have some mentions of word marks. And word is spelled W-Y-R-D, but it's pronounced W-O-R-D. It's pronounced like word. We learn about Gavin, the first king of Otterlin, and Queen Elena Galathinius Havilliard. It's a whole mouthful. We learn about the Dark Lord Erewhon, and then Gavin's sword, which is called Damaris. And then in chapter 30, when Selena is looking at the map, we get a whole slew of new names. So we get Banjali, which is the Eelway capital, Maya, Orinth, the Surian coast, and Terrasen. And then the following chapter in 31, they have the poisons test where they talk about Belladonna, Hemlock, Bloodroot, Monkshood, and Oleander. Our last new character is introduced, I think, toward the end of this stretch of chapters, and his name is pronounced Renault, and he's described as the vicious mercenary who'd stepped up to replace Varen as Cain's right-hand man. So his name is pronounced Renault. Going back over some of our main characters, we have Selena Sardothian, also known as Lillian Gordana, Kael Westfall, Nehemia Itger, Dorian Havilliard, and then some of the places that they've talked about a few times are Eelway, Irelia, the Rune Mountains, and the White Fang Mountains. That was a lot, again.
I know. I feel like I'm sitting here trying to like pronounce them in my head as you say them, because I'm just reading the book. And so
my brain's the type that as soon as he was like, it's the Day of the Dead, my brain was like, okay, Halloween. So every time I saw that word, my brain was just like, Halloween. We're calling it Halloween. Don't worry about it.
All right. So John is going to kick us off with some chapter recaps. There was a lot going on in this stretch of chapters.
There's a lot going on. So we have a last minute addition to the pronunciations. One was missed in our research.
Georgina.
There we go.
Georgina Havilliard.
So Dorian's mom. The queen wants Dorian to marry, but no one catches his attention. And kind of in the same breath, Selena starts noticing just how handsome Dorian is. She's been kissed by Sam, but he's dead. Coltane finds out that the queen gave Dorian a list of suitors and tries to get the info from Duke Parrington. Selena plays the pianoforte and is quite good. Dorian catches her and she shares that Sam did die quite close to when she was captured 13 months ago. The second test rolls around. It's climbing. They have to climb up and get a flag. One of the competitors falls to his death, and Selena saves Nox. Kind of a big deal. Another champion didn't show and was found to be another murdered champion. Time passes. They don't go into the details, but there are two more tests that she obviously passes, moves on. She has a nightmare that she's back in Endovir after like failing one of the tests. Selena and Nehemia walking with Kael, and they come across Cain digging at the marks in the ground at the watchtower. Very interesting. Nehemia says that they are word marks. That's kind of when we get introduced to that. And while Selena is looking at them, Nehemia looks at her like kind of strangely and says something about how Selena is maybe not who she seems, but we don't get any more information. Selena finds a secret door behind a tapestry in her room. One path leads to sewers and a secret way like out of the castle. Another path leads to the tomb of Gavin and Elena. Elena shows up, like her spirit, and tells her that there's evil in the castle and that Selena needs to put a stop to it. She also gives her an amulet in this kind of like dream sequence type of thing. She doesn't know if she's dreaming, but she clearly didn't because the amulet is real. Another champion winds up dead. And then we also find out that Cain knows who Selena is, which is a big deal as well. Selena, in the meantime, she starts to research word marks, finds out what they are, and that there are also word gates, which can open doors to other realms. Dorian teaches her to play pool with the oldest trick in the book. They get to another test, and it's basically sparring with a random partner. She's basically had enough of like trying to, you know, stick to the middle. And she basically takes three hits and literally drop kicks Varen out of the sparring ring, which is a pretty sweet read. Coltane is starting to get like bad headaches. She's also trying to get into good graces with the queen to try and like get to Dorian, since she knows that she's trying to get suitors for Dorian and all that. And guess what? There's been another murder, and it's Varen, and he's got word marks all around him and stuff. And Kael takes Selena to investigate the crime scene and the body. She determines that there may be a person summoning the creature. A little twist there. Kael observes Parrington at a dinner later that night, notices some interesting like shifting in his eyes. Elena shows up again. and tells Selena to look to her right. Doesn't really give any context. Test the next day, there's like an order of goblets of poison, and they have to like drink the one that they think is the least amount of poison. Selena looks to her right to find Pelor, which is described as like a master of poisons, giving her confirmation of the one without poison. And they both pass the test. They're the only ones that pass drinking the goblet with zero poison. So Selena and Nehemia, they visit the kennels, and Dorian promises her not to kill a puppy. Very romantic. A legion of Adrelin catches a group of 500 Ilwe rebels. And when a few try to escape, they end up killing the entire 500, which is super devastating. Obviously, Nehemia is beside herself. Kale maybe tries to ask Selena to Yulmus, and she vomits because she's got the Red Death. And he trips on the door on his way out when she vomits, which is pretty funny. Dorian visits. They flirt. She gives him a dirty book. He also gets a little real and says how he wishes things were different, and that basically he would be ruling like in a different way from his father right now. Kale trusts Selena, we find out. He's like afraid because she's an assassin, all that stuff. The amulet, we find out, could be the eye of Elena. We learn that from Dorian. It's said to protect the wearer from Erewhon. Selena finds word marks under her bed, removes them in a frenzy. Selena finds Nehemia in the library reading like a really advanced book in the common tongue. When she kind of like asks her about it, Nehemia replies in the perfect common tongue. They've been kind of like practicing a little bit, but she replies with like perfect language. So it's like, is Nehemia hiding something? Boom.
On to our favorite moments or quotes or random things we decided to write down in this section. Since I'm going first here, I went in order of like the chapters, and I've been keeping like my notes down for each chapter kind of a thing. So I thought it was really funny when we meet the queen. How did we say her name was?
Georgina.
Georgina. When we meet the queen and she's talking to Dorian, and she's like, you need to get married already. And he was like, I'm 19. Calm down. Like, yes, ma'am, calm down. Like, he's 19 years old. I don't know what it is in this world, this fantasy world, but that does feel a little dramatic to me. But like the whole like little paper thing, you know, like she gives him a list of names. It's very Bridgerton, which is where my whole world is right now with the new series coming out. So I was like, oh, classic mom on the marriage mark.
That's just how it goes in the ton.
Do they have the lifespan of medieval people? Like, 35 is an old man, because if so, he's middle-aged.
That's true.
The clock is ticking.
So like the whole thing with Caltaine trying to get the like list of names or whatever, and then you find out that she and Duke Parrington are like supposed to be together, or kind of, or she's like she thinks she's tricking him, but I think she just is in over her head. I don't really know what's going on, but I was like, no, please let those two be together. That's a great match.
They deserve each other.
Yes. But then later, with this like same concept, Dorian is like thinking about Selena or something. And he says something like, she's surprisingly average height or something. And I was like, dude, no wonder you're single at 19. Like, you need to figure out how to compliment ladies. You need to figure out, like, earlier he calls her fat. Now she's just average. Bro, needs to work on his game.
For someone who's described as being so charming.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked the whole piano part with like the music and the way she played the music, like as a music teacher. So like, that's literally my life. Also, as someone who has played piano since the second grade, I just really love anytime there's like music done well, like, cause there's clearly times that people who don't know musicians and they write something like that in a book. It's like, that's not how that works. But this wasn't one of those moments. This was a good one. So I like the part where it was quote from chapter 20, where it said, Selena eyed the pianoforte. She used to play. Oh, she loved to play, loved music, the way music could break and heal and make everything seem possible and heroic.
Yeah.
I really love that line. I thought that was really cool.
This is so good.
Something I'm struggling with this entire book is, am I supposed to be Team Kale or am I supposed to be Team Dorian? Yeah. Team Kyle or Team Dorian, like, because Sarah J. Maas has done me dirty one too many times, because I have read ACOTAR and I have read Crescent City, and I know we're not talking about those, but it just makes me nervous to trust people. I don't know. I just feel like she's going to take me on a wild ride and it just makes me nervous. I just feel like somebody's going to end up like betraying her, or it just isn't meant to be her person. But I also know I probably won't figure out any of this for like 5 or 6 books or something. But like in one chapter, at the beginning of the chapter, she was talking to Kale and she was like, idiot. And then she's like grinning and he's all like, crazed criminal. And he's grinning. And I was like, oh my God, the banter. And then I was like, okay, I'm team Kale. And then like literal conversation later, she's talking to Dorian and it's like, he usually just grinned and winked at her and made her feel ridiculously tingly and warm. And then I was like, oh, so then I'm like, I'll team him. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm always going to try to find the romance in every scenario.
I'm team both, if it helps.
I was like, I know that you guys have read it, and so we can't really openly have this conversation. I just don't know which one I'm supposed to pick. And then for all I know, it's some other dude that's not even there yet.
So like, I have read the series, obviously. So like, I know what ends up happening at some point. However, I'm like so along for this ride right now, because I feel like the first time I read it, I didn't pick up on like as much of this. Like, I mean, I knew there was like flirting happening and stuff. John actually said the first time we read the series, he was telling me, I think I do have a video of you complaining about how like he didn't want to be interested in the little like flirtation kind of like banter moments.
Because it's so like high school, teenage-y, flirty, like, I hate you. You know what I mean? And like, I hated it at first. And then I was just
let me help you play pool.
Yeah. And then she just had me like eating out of her hand by like the middle of the book. And I'm just like, I hate that I like this so much.
And I think it was also because I was only reading Throne of Glass with John at the time. So I wasn't like gushing to John about how hot Dorian is, you know, but now that we're all here.
Because I'm hotter. Straight facts.
I will agree to that. That's fine.
I do kind of want to go back and reread their descriptions again, now that I feel like I know them a little bit better, because you say that and then I'm like, what does he look like?
Yeah, but definitely do not look up any fan art. This is also just a PSA for everyone listening. If you have not finished the entire series, and I do mean the entire series, do not look up any fan art. Don't encourage your algorithm to show it to you either, because that ruined some stuff for me. So if you need fan art,
find a trusted friend that can send you
spoiler-free fan art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a PSA. Are you getting into fan art? You should find a trusted friend. Don't get this back alley fan art, guys. It's not safe. Ask your doctor if fan art's right for you.
Laying awake in the middle of the night, wondering about fan art? Call this number.
There is help available.
That's funny.
Anyway.
Yep.
I do have a lot of notes about that. I feel like 90% of what I highlighted in this chapter section was just like the banter between Selena and Kale and Dorian. Like, I loved it all so much.
I totally called, 100% called, that there was going to be some sort of secret passage, or like she's in some castle. Like, there's no way in a fantasy series there's an old castle that there's not some secret lever or tapestry that's hiding a door, you know?
Wrong lever, Kronk.
Wrong lever. Yeah, absolutely. So I totally called that. However, it does make me skeptical of Dorian, because I think he put her in that room. Like, he was like, oh, good thing you're not in the glass castle. So like, he knew where she was going to be, and he's grew up there. So it makes me think he would know, especially because like the king's hiding spot is down there, or like their getaway is down there in the sewers. So like, they know there's tunnels, like they know that's a thing. So that makes me skeptical of him. And then also made me skeptical of Kale, because he's like the head of the guard. Like, wouldn't he also know?
Well, because like, he and Dorian grew up in the castle together too, right?
Yeah. It just makes me like, you're putting in literally like the smartest person ever. Why would you like not think she's going to check every tiny nook and cranny and make sure she's safe or whatever? I don't know. It just makes me skeptical of them.
I think it has more to do with like the room itself, whatever room they put her in. My guess is that like nobody has ever used that. So it's like, when would anybody have an opportunity to even find that door?
They do make some references too to like the criminals like not being important. And so I'm assuming that's why they're not staying in the glass part of the castle. Like, they probably put them in this like concealed like stone part that they probably don't ever have guests stay in. Not to say that like nobody's familiar with that room, or no one has ever moved that tapestry before. But that is a good point about like maybe Dorian knew that that was there or something. Because like, we also talked about maybe Philippa being specifically assigned to Selena because of her personality or whatever. You did totally call that, though.
And this is totally like a reach, has no evidence to it whatsoever. But maybe the king's still in there, like just hanging out. He never actually left on vacation and he's just watching this whole thing, hanging in these weird catacombs of the castle. Or it could also be used for that, the beast that's being summoned to secretly get around.
Oh, I thought that, but I didn't think that the king was there. And what if the king is summoning the things?
I don't think he is. He seemed like such a sweet guy.
What a lovely man. I love gargoyles. I know that's so dumb to say, but like, if you have not read the Crave series, you should totally go do that because it is one of my faves. I made Connor read it. So I don't want to like spoil that, but there are gargoyles in there. And so the first mention of the clock tower, whenever they were like climbing the tower to get the flag, that there were gargoyles and they're like hopping across them and they're doing the things. And so I'm like, oh my God, gargoyles are so cool. And like, they're probably secretly alive and they're just like living in there. And then like later there's these creatures that came awake and were growling. And even if they're evil, even if they're these like creepy monsters, I'm just excited that they like are real. I just, that's so dumb, I know, but I love them. I love the concept of them. I think they're cool. So I'm just putting that out there.
That I wrote that in my notes too because I was so excited about it. Because there's like, I don't know, I guess I haven't read like a ton of fantasy series, but I was like, gargoyles, great. Lord's gonna love this.
And I did. Okay. In chapter 30, Kale takes her down to actually see a body and they see the claw marks and she's describing that it was sharpened and how it like points into her and like all of these things and exactly how it's like claws are. And then immediately the like conversation Dorian has is like, had Keltain been clawing at you or something like that? And I was like, interesting choice of words after extreme detail on the claws of this creature that she's clawing at you. I don't know if that means anything, but I felt like it was
Lauren's on claw watch. Shout out to fantasy fangirls because that's what they've been talking about in their Akatar deep dives lately and it's cracking me up. So apparently we're also on claw watch now.
Yep. Yes, we are, apparently. Okay, and then finally, at the very end, I've literally this whole time been talking about, I suspected this person, and I'm watching this person, and now I'm watching Keltain, and now I'm doing, and I didn't expect Nehemia, and I didn't think of her at all. Like, she's just the bestie. She's just, like, chilling on the side. Like, we're just good friends. And, oh, I'm so mad at myself for, like, being so in-depth, but I didn't get her best friend right in front of my face. And obviously, like, I haven't finished the book. I have no idea if this is a miscommunication or whatever. Like, I have no idea. This is where we've left things. But I literally wrote just like, ugh, because I'm just so mad. Anyways, that's my thoughts.
I had fewer notes in this section. And I was even talking with Lauren, like, I'm really bad about picking out moments like that. But I did like Selena playing the pianoforte in remembrance of Sam. I felt like it was the first time that she opened up as a character. Like, I knew her as a person because of how she judged people she was just meeting, and nothing was like a past relationship. So that was nice.
Interesting.
And I really liked the quote in a conversation she had with Dorian. I think it might have even been in the same scene where they were saying, like, what's the point in having a mind if you don't use it to make judgments? What's the point in having a heart if you don't use it to spare others from the harsh judgments of your mind? I like wordplay like that. So that did well for me.
Yeah, I totally forgot about Sam as a person. Like, he's mentioned for like a minute and then he's
kind of rude.
I mean, I don't know him. Sorry. I've heard his name twice. And then they call it Sam Hewen, which I definitely thought the first time was about Sam. Like, I thought the first time.
It was a huge insult to her. Hey, remember that guy who died? Yeah, we're going to talk all about him if you want to come.
She also wasn't even invited, so.
Which also is rude, by the way. I don't understand that.
She was one of the two who weren't invited, I think they said. Yep. She found out later by like peeking into the other party. But
I like the idea of her like peeking in like total like Princess Diaries 2 style, you know, where she's like watching in through the little duct.
I have not completely forgotten about Sam because I don't like to forget about people who died off screen, even though it said he died right in front of her. I can only take it so far until I see it happen. He has to die in front of me, Selena. The only other note I had, which I only really thought of when you started talking about them playing pool. First of all, yeah, the oldest move in the book, picking a sport where you have to teach them like pool or golf, where it's like, well, I could teach you, but I am going to have to basically spoon.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not like, you know, you can't do that in basketball, really. Like, hold on, I'm going to hold you and we'll get it in.
Oh, Kyle.
Wow. Yeah.
Who knew basketball could be like that? I should read more basketball romance.
Comment like slipped right by me.
Yeah, where's the basketball romance?
Somebody send me a recommendation.
Space Jam.
Okay, nope.
You gotta watch out for Bugs. He likes his carrots.
There's something that not. Let's just move on.
I was only gonna say I was upset. It was jarring for them to be like, "Yeah, we're playing pool," because I felt like, "Oh, I was in this fantasy land, and all of a sudden we're just playing the most famous barroom game." Like,
yeah,
I'm gonna get really nerdy here, but I'm pretty sure like the early 1300s and was when pool was made. Like King Louis the Ninth was the most famous pool player back in his day, but it was because they wanted smaller versions of their outside lawn games. So I could see feasibly how they would come up with that in this mystical realm, but to also just be like, yeah, it's pool.
In the game room, just chilling there.
But it's right next to our family theater. I don't know. It took me out of it a little bit, is all I'm saying. If I get to the next chapter and there's indoor plumbing, I'm going to be upset.
Is there, though? Is there indoor plumbing? Because, like, when she's washing the marks underneath, she just kept going back to the washroom to get more water. And I was like, where's this water coming from?
That's a great question. So we're on claw watch. We're on plumbing watch.
If Dorian comes in after a fight and is like, do you need a water bottle? I'm going to be so mad.
Kale's like live tweeting the events.
I guess it's my turn. So I definitely connected like way more this time around with, I put the seriousness of Selena finding the tomb of Gavin and Elena. I don't know why. Maybe it's because we kind of like know that full story. Yeah, it was just a little more dramatic for me. And as she was going through, like realizing what exactly she just stumbled upon.
I will say with that being the first time I read, I felt like it just came out of nowhere. That and the scene where they were like climbing up the wall or whatever to get the flag. Both of those times I was like, what just happened? That all just happened. And I had to like go back and like take a second with it. And so maybe it was one of those for you, John, where you just like read it the first time. And then this time you're like, oh, I'm reading it this time. Like,
yeah, because the test just literally started, like all of them were like halfway up the wall. So it was just kind of like, wait, what's happening?
And same with this one. It was just like she was running through things. Oh, and then all of a sudden she's standing in front of the sarcophagus and so it was just like, wait, where am I? Like, what just happened?
I do remember feeling like that the first time we read the book, because they start to introduce these larger concepts from the first book. And we were kind of talking about this a little bit with coming off of reading something like Powerless. You're kind of comparing it to the Hunger Games or something where you're like, oh, like she's at the castle, like the trials are going to be the main focal point of the book. And then they start introducing all these other things like halfway through and you're like, oh.
I think that's one of Kyle's big things, is that the trials haven't been important.
They are a B plot. They're happening in the background. Like whenever one happens, I'm like, okay, I guess. Yeah, good job. And then on to like many more chapters of what I actually am here for.
Yeah, three more tests happened, moved on.
Yeah, like I think they've skipped like at least three or four tests.
But there are like 13.
Yeah, because it'll say like, oh, the previous test was dagger throwing. Thank God. Anyway.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like, all right, well, what happened?
Obviously
like,
not a big deal.
Yeah, I think they skip at least one, if not two, in between the ones we do see, which means they're skipping literal months at a time. Like when Elena came and visited her the second time, I was like, lady, you just saw her, calm down. But like, maybe it really was like, who knows how many weeks that she's just been chilling there, not doing enough or something.
All the way from Halloween to Christmas.
It's true. It's Yule Miss.
Merry Yule Miss.
Actually, I think you'll find it's Yule Miss in this world.
We celebrate by playing pool.
And spooning. Baby, it's cold outside. Dorian is hilarious. I am connecting with their banter like way more this time around. But at the same time, it also kind of makes me feel bad for Kale, because he's obviously crushing on her a little bit too. And being the captain of the guard and being a friend of the crown prince, he is probably used to the ladies going more for Dorian.
That's sad.
Well, sorry, dude. You're going to come in second probably every time.
But see, that makes me want her to pick him. That makes me sad for him. And I want him to have a win.
Poor Kale.
It is a little like sad though to also think like, I don't know how attractive people find the whole thing where it's, you know, like, well, you probably don't want me because my friend's so hot. Like, all right, you just give it up then.
But he's not said that. He's not done any of that.
Right. But that's sort of the situation. I mean, he has hinted at
it. Yeah, it's like they're leading toward that. Like, he's like, Dorian's like, I wonder how Kale is like feeling about her or something. And Kale's doing the same thing. He's like, what are you doing here in the middle of the night? What are you doing here in the middle of the night? I was just walking around the castle. I was just walking around the castle too.
Just teaching her pool, man.
I'm just teaching her how to hit the balls right. Whoops. We probably won't put that one in the podcast, will we?
Put it in there. Put it in. Oh, don't say that.
Don't put it in. Put it in.
Mixed messages is what I hated about dating.
We're going to need to add another content warning to the beginning of this one.
My dad just started watching. Hi, Dad. Are you proud of me?
Anyway.
Yep.
And then finally, Kale tripping through the door as he leaves after Selena vomits. The picture I had in my head of that was just incredible. It was so funny. There are like servants coming in the door and he's like trying to push past them to get out. And he's like looking back and then he just like trips on the door frame and he just like.
This is one of those moments that you have to remember they're like 19. So it's like a teenage boy. A girl's on her period. Oh, I gotta get out of here, you know, kind of vibes.
And that's a good point.
Yeah. So it's just that young and dumb. And that was funny to me. I thought it was good.
It's interesting that kind of shows the difference a little bit in Kale and Dorian. Dorian's supposed to be a little more experienced, right? And that doesn't seem to bother him because he comes in and Kale's like freaking out about it.
Especially because Kale sees like dead bodies and whatever, and you think blood or whatever would be no big deal.
But that's also true.
Maybe he does the same thing when he's finding people. He cuts them, they start bleeding. He's like, oh no,
I gotta go.
The other guards are like, why'd this guy make captain? But doesn't he say too that like he's captain of the guard? He's not a soldier.
Oh,
he
doesn't that's go true. Out to war.
He's like the day shift admin team doesn't see any sort of like.
Yeah, that's also a
it's
good
all
point.
Paperwork to him.
Manager Kale, this is going to be such a specific niche reference, but I hope it resonates with someone because this is immediately what my brain went to when you were talking about Kale tripping like on his way out the door because he was so flustered. And I had to look up the episode because I need the people to watch it. In Gilmore Girls, season 4, episode 22, when Lorelai is like freaking out about Luke and she's like super flustered and she's like, I don't know if he's flirting with me or not, like what's going on? And she pulls Rory outside of Luke's and Rory's like, dude, just be cool, it's fine. So they go back inside and the first word Luke says to her, she like falls all over the table and like knocks everything off of it. It's so random, but it's like one of my favorite moments in the whole show. So if you haven't seen that, season 4, episode 22, Lorelai falls on a table. That's what I think of when I think of Kale tripping his way out of the door.
Well, and maybe it's like he has a point of view of her in his brain, which is this like BA assassin lady. He's seen her throw up like because she's working out so tough. And so just to like see her actually sick, maybe that was some of it too. Like his feelings, thinking like Lorelai with Luke. And it's just like, I don't know what to do with myself. And so maybe it was some of that. I don't know. Trying to defend the guy. Oh, I like him.
Yeah. Just picture him like turning the corner. And the first thing he does is just do that headbang against all like stupid. What was I thinking?
And then he maybe even saw Dorian like coming down the hall or something. And then he really is off being like, ugh, that was my chance.
New theory. Dorian tripped him. Dorian just like, nerd, went in to go woo the girl.
He's got like whooshes his hair the whole bit. The mysterious wind blows in his face.
Because tonight will be the night that I will fall for you.
Oh, wow. Well, like I said, most of my notes are pertaining to Kale and Dorian and their little moments with Selena. And one thing that I had to point out, because this is really for the book girlies, SJM knew exactly what she was doing. Putting the Crown Prince of Otterlin in light gray pants in chapter 17. It's like the first description of him in this chapter. And that was cracking me up.
It's not like they're not sweatpants.
It says something like the light gray pants were comfortable enough.
Yeah, those are sweatpants and fantasy words. Oh, yeah.
If they have sweatpants, again, I'm angry. Look back in medieval times. Do you think anyone was like, you know what I could use? Pants that are hotter than normal. No.
Second of all, one of the lines that I was cracking up at, I was listening to the audiobook at this part and I had to go back because my head is just in this like YA space right now. And like, these are young adult books, but the part where Selena and Dorian are talking, he comes in and like she and Nehemia are sparring and he's like, what are you doing? And he pulls her aside and she says, apparently a woman can only go so long without a sword between her hands. I was like, Selena.
Nehemia is a long way from home.
Yeah, but it was just funny. And then when she asks Dorian later in the same conversation if he's as deft at handling his sword as Captain Westfall, he leans in and whispers, "Better."
Oh, whisper it, like, Con.
Handling his own sword, you know. All right, go handle it then. Get out of here.
I was in the car listening to the audiobook and I'm like giggling. I had to wait until I stopped driving to like go back and flip through the ebook to highlight. And I'm like, what? Like freaking out. Anyway, I just thought that was hilarious. Also in chapter 20, I love like Selena's little assassin brain. I feel like there are a lot of times where the female main character is like supposed to be this like really tough, highly trained, whatever. And like, they just keep describing the character that way, but you don't really see it in the way that they think or like in their day-to-day thoughts and actions. And so I love that like every time she enters a room, I don't know, like she's altering the hinges on her doors to squeak really loudly so she can hear when somebody comes in, or she's making weapons out of like broken pins or stolen sewing needles. And anytime she's like going back into the secret tunnels or whatever, it just always makes me go, secret tunnel. Sorry.
I forget the next part, but secret tunnel.
Anyway. She's always just like thinking of all of those things in any given room. I don't know. I just love that. I think a lot of the times you get that they're supposed to be a baddie, but they're, you don't really see that in any of their description.
With her, like, I don't know, little assassin brain with that. Like, I think I forget that she's an assassin. I keep forgetting that. And so then instead it's like, oh, people are murdered and I'm scared. But if this dude and this dude died, I'd be cool with that. It's like, she's just like totally chill with other death, you know, because death doesn't mean as much to her, I think, in that way, because she's probably taken so many lives. It doesn't say how many, I don't think,
right,
that she's taken, but it's like those little moments that I'm like, oh yeah, she kills people. I forgot about that part. I'm glad she's keeping that fresh in my brain because I keep forgetting that she's an assassin, even though they even reference her as that. But
wasn't it since she was like 8 or 14 that she had trained? So that's like her childhood is.
Yeah. I think it said she was 8 when Arabin found her. So she had all of her like training becoming Otterland's assassin. So however many people it takes to get to that point.
And to be famous enough for it.
At least 3.
At least. At a minimum.
Minimum 3.
If they're high profile, I mean.
You can't just kill some guy. They gotta have a name, you know?
Can't be Bill.
Which, by the way, Gavin, another normal name.
Yep. Also dead.
It's true. Also dead.
Yeah,
that's true. I'm not going to trust any normal name for the rest of this book.
She throws him out. She's like, oh, this guy's dead. It doesn't matter. Devin.
Devins, if you're listening, you do matter.
There is help.
Oh, all right. We got way off track with that one. She is a great assassin.
And we're back.
Oh my gosh. Okay, really the rest of my notes are just me like fangirling over Kael and Dorian, as I've mentioned several times. But I was going to ask, would this qualify as a trope or like a micro trope where one of the main characters is having like a terrible dream and then they wake up and the other character's there and they're like, it's okay, it was just a dream. And it's like the middle of the night and they're like consoling that. I don't know. Is that a micro trope? I feel like it happens a lot in books.
I feel like it's a trope.
I don't know. Sure. If that is a trope, it's one of my favorite ones, apparently, because I eat that up. So I just needed to make a note of that.
I guess I know I'm waking you up in the middle of the night tonight and be like, it's okay. It's just a dream.
I'll be like, what are you talking about?
Are you the type to remember your dreams, Connor? Would you just believe him? Like, oh, yeah, I guess I was.
Probably. Oh, my last note is just that. Chapter 34, really the whole chapter, all the banter in that chapter, I was melting in my hoodie. That's all I'm going to say about that. Okay, so we've talked about favorite moments specifically, but what were your overall reactions to this part?
I think we just like talked about how I'm way too overthinky everything. I feel like that meme of that guy with like all the strings and he's like trying to connect it all and he's like, can't get any sleep. And that's where I'm at every time I'm reading something and I'm like trying to write stuff down so I remember things. But I'm just really mad at myself that I never once looked at Nehemia. I feel like I've trusted her. I've let like just friendship. She came crying to her room. And like I say all that, but then what if I'm reacting to this like one moment and it's just a big miscommunication trope? I'm trying to like remain calm.
Selena and Nehemia in a third act breakup for no reason.
I mean, maybe. They're friends. Friends have breakups sometimes. I also wish that she didn't delete her word mark so fast under her bed. Like, I feel like she should have asked Kale for help, or she should have took a picture, or like, you know, wrote it down or something. Like, instead she was just like, water. And so now she has this, like, I think Kyle said it was a sticky note from Nehemia of her word marks. And like, she could have like compared, now that she has Nehemia, she could like go look at it in a book, but she could have done that with like the ones in her bed or whatever. And so I just feel like that was a huge mistake.
That's a good one.
Cow.
For me personally, like I kind of touched on it earlier, I'm not really into the tests. They seem like they are now the B plot. I'm more interested in the mutilations, the secret tunnels, the other downtime miscellany. I don't know. I just feel like they're taking a backseat. And maybe at the end, the four-person duel, which, by the way, it doesn't grammatically make sense, will be fun. But like right now, I just feel like it's skipping over. Sorry, guys. I'm going to have to write the author and correct her on that one. It's actually not a duel if there's more than two people.
Actually, I just Googled it, and a duel between four people is called a quarrel.
Oh, so it's not called a duel then? Is that what I'm hearing?
So anyway, yeah. So for their quarrel.
That's kind of funny to know that quarrel is that, because I feel like now everyone's like, you guys having a quarrel? I could be like, no, there's just two of us.
No, we're having a duel.
Clearly.
And your vocabulary was just enhanced, Kyle.
It was. So I appreciate it. The only other thing was the word. And I talked about this with Lauren, where we were like, oh, word marks. This is nerdy again. From Hamlet, it just means word. But back then that meant fate. So I kind of wondered if the marks had to do with the actual fate of the person doing them, or something to do with, like, you can mark things and either change or see the fates somehow. So I'd be interested in that as well.
Yeah.
He just said word marks and fate and whatever, and it made me think of it. But like, I had two random thoughts about them. One was maybe somebody's coming and writing them after the death, like in a send-off-y way kind of a vibe, or like a protect-y your soul type way. So there's that.
Protect your soul.
I've been fantasy wording. I don't know. Anyways, and then during the one that she saw in the hallway, not the one that Kale took her to. I don't know your answer.
He's still laughing at your protect.
I can't get it out of my head. It's like a Harry Potter spell. Protecting.
I was just about to mention Harry Potter. I was going to say, not the death that she saw, like that Kale took her to, but the one she saw with the guards on the way to the library. And she just saw it, and she saw the marks like written in blood on the wall. And I was like, are they trying to open the Chamber of Secrets or something? Like, is there something going on, you know, like in that kind of a way? So I have had other thoughts.
Enemies of the air, beware.
Protect your soul. So I have had other thoughts about those. I just want to put that out there, because I feel like once, if I just keep listing all my 100 theories, I'm going to be right about something. And then I can be like, I was right later. And that will make me feel better. So
it's protect your soul, not protect your saw. Come on.
I was picturing like Harry at the lake going, protect your soul.
I wish. I need a fantasy book to have magic like that, where it's just like if a toddler named your spells.
We have toddlers. We could write it. Oh, then I'm like literally crying.
Oh, protect your soul. It's like, bless your heart. It's that.
Protect your soul, honey. Okay, so at this point in the story, have your perceptions changed on any of the characters? Do you have any different feelings from episode one on like Dorian, Kael, Selena, Caltaine, and then obviously Nehemia, which we've touched on a little bit?
I feel like I struggle to like give my heart to a character until I know I'm allowed to like keep them. Obviously, like it's a book and somebody might like die or whatever, but like until she's picked, like as far as like Dorian or Kale kind of goes. And so therefore everything that they're doing, like I think Dorian's hilarious, and I think Kale's kind of charming in his own little way, and like their own cute little banter and stuff. I don't know. My feelings are mixed because her feelings are mixed, I think. And I just, you know, I'm reading her perspective on it. So maybe there's that. I was really interested in, you learn more about Caltaine in this one. Is it opium that she's smoking? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And so she's like clearly going through stuff. Like the first time you meet her, you just think she's like some ditzy, wants the prince kind of guy, but she's much more calculated. And you kind of see that from her a little bit. And then obviously Nehemia, we just have this huge bomb right at the end. I don't know. I want to give her the benefit of the doubt only because I've liked her so much so far, but the fact that she was so rude about it, I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Okay.
And kind of the same with Dorne and Kale. My opinions haven't changed too much of them aside from, I guess, like he's not as much of a player as everyone says he is. He actually has like a goal in mind for his future relationship. He claims where he's like, I want to marry for love, not just for, you know, my father or the kingdom or for the sake of making his mom happy. So it wasn't a great adjustment in my opinion of him, but I was like, all right, well, you know, at least you're saying that. There's got to be at least a grain of truth to it, hopefully. I think I like Kale more just because he's become a little more playful, like we said, with the banter, and he has a very similar sense of like humor and sort of teasing as I do. So whenever he does things, I'm like, yeah, I agree. That was the right move.
Maybe that's why I like him too.
Selena, like I said, she's revealed some more of her past. So it's nice to have a little bit more of a connection to her because up until then, there really wasn't one aside from knowing her reactions to people. Like Lauren said, people die in books. I wouldn't have been too bothered if it was her at that point because I didn't know her that well. But I mean, and she was doing some things that I thought were pretty deserving of it, like you mentioned earlier, Lauren, where people are dying and like, granted, she's an assassin, but she was like, that sucks. And she wasn't like looking into it aside from making her hinges a little noisier. I was like, eh. And she had like the whole secret door to her room that she didn't secure from her side, like other people could have gotten in
or have gotten in because somebody wrote those word marks or whatever.
Yeah, true. That's true. And like, who knows how long those have been there. For Caltaine, I'm starting to think that because of her headaches, something about her being around Duke Perrington is messing with her brain because of the moment where his eyes went pure black at the dinner. That I think it was Kale who saw that, and he said, like, no one else seemed to notice it. Eyes turning pure black is classic possession, so I feel like somebody's in that body that's not Duke. And it may be that he's in some control as well, but that's, again, my off-the-wall theory. No evidence aside from black eyes. I mean, I've seen Supernatural. That's sign number one. For Nehemia, I had my suspicions earlier, and I really wish I tried so hard to find it afterwards because I was telling Lauren I'm really bad at taking notes in the moment, which I need to get better at. But there was a conversation that she was having with Selena and Kale where Kale said something to Nehemia, and Nehemia just nodded, and Selena was like, oh, she just nodded as if she got the gist of it. I didn't need to translate that time. And I was like, that was a pretty long sentence for her to just get the gist of it, but whatever. And then later on when she spoke to her, I was like, oh, she probably knows the language already. So I feel like maybe she just faked it to hear what other people were saying because people talk more freely out around people they don't think know the language. But yeah, that's about it for my character changes.
All right. Well, I guess this kind of rolls into theories, but do you have any living theories on like who you think is committing the murders around the castle right now? Do you have any suspects?
I think at first I went with like Kane or Duke Perrington because they just seem to be like the big bad guys, whatever. I don't think that anymore. Right now, I think my current theory is that it is Caltaine, maybe, because she has all these headaches and that feels like a very, like, she's using all her energy in a magic type way. Like, and so it's showing in having bad migraines or like she's using too much mental energy for stuff. I just feel like there's more to her than this just debutante want the prince kind of way, because there's so many girls like that in this castle. So why is she matter? I guess that she's a character that's named. Like, there's got to be something to her. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I've gone through a list. Well, as of chapter 35, that's where I'm at.
I hold that I don't think Nehemia is going to be the big traitor. I think she'll go against possibly the kingdom and the king. But when it comes down to it, she'll side with Selena. She knows something about these word marks, obviously magic in some way, I would suppose. I really think that like the people who are conspiring these murders is a group. I want to say Duke Perrington's involved somehow and that Caltaine is as well. And Kane, although I'm not fully sold on Caltaine and Kane knowing their part, like I feel like they might just be swept up along in the Duke Perrington and I really do think the king conspiring some sort of, I have like the least evidence for it. It's just a feeling, but with the magic chalk circles, the ritual murders, the secret tunnels. He's doing some sort of ritual to, I think, open up a gate because of these word marks being able to open up the word gates. And he's trying to bring some nasty stuff in. Possibly, I believe it was Erewhon.
Yeah.
Somehow involved, but I don't have all the pieces. But I do think Nahimi is going to be on Team Celaena. Possibly just her magic user friend who keeps her up and running while she's trying to save herself and maybe the kingdom.
So, guys, what are your theories? Give us the query on your theories.
Fancy. I don't know. I'm struggling with Dorian because I feel like his parents are who his parents are. Like, that's how he was raised. And his dad is like super evil. So it makes me worried that he is like some secret being nice to her, but is also secretly evil in the background. And he's just this young, charming guy and can get away with stuff. I keep waiting for, is it Erobin, the King of Assassins guy? Cause she like mentioned like he's out there somewhere in this city. And so I just imagine like he's going to show up. That's just like I have that he's coming back at some point. So there's that. I don't think anyone's going to win the competition. I just think the competition doesn't matter because in the main part of the whole book, it hasn't super mattered. And so part of me thinks like something big and epic is going to happen, or she doesn't. Like she like takes the secret tunnel exit and we don't know who wins. I don't know. I just don't see it ending that way with like a big happy ending. Yeah. You did it. Here's your new job. Like, that's just not how I imagine it. I already mentioned that I think Caltaine's headaches is because she's doing some sort of summoning something for this creature of some sort.
Yeah. Some of mine I've already touched on, like Nahemia knowing more than she put on. I'm not fully sold on her being necessarily evil, but definitely some hidden plans there. Celaena, I definitely think will take that super sharp sword that she found. I'm surprised she didn't in the moment, but maybe she's just keeping it safe for now. Maybe she respects the dead more than I thought she would, but I 100% think she's going to take it. It was too well described. That was very much like a, this is a key item sort of thing. Like, I'm going to have to remember it later.
It's a surprise tool that'll help us later.
Yeah. Oh, toodles.
Clearly, we are parents of toddlers here.
Mickey Mouse says, you're going to need this sword. Behead the king. Which one of our tools could kill a man? Oh, no. That's right. The sword. I do think at the murder scene of Varen, they were talking about like how he would have been able to see his attacker due to torches and the whole length of the hall. Like, he would have seen it coming. So the only thing I can think of is whatever monster it is also invisible. If it's a magic creature that you can summon, why not it be invisible? You can't necessarily run away from what you can't see. So, and the fact that like there's nothing left behind except for like the claw marks, which she said, was it sharpening its claws? There was no, I don't know, like scales or fur or anything on the body that led to a visible piece of evidence that they could track an animal to. Kind of a side theory, but Dorian's a puppy killer, and I'm sorry if you think gifting one puppy out of puppy love is enough to forgive the countless slain under his watch. He's a puppy killer, and that's just a fact. He let one puppy live, and how many has he had bred under his watch? So maybe that, put that on the scales when you're ranking him versus Kale together. Wow. You know, or how many puppies has Kale let die?
I mean, it's a valid point.
Well, and in my notes about this, I had said, like, when he gave her the puppy, I said, if this puppy dies, I will riot. But now I feel bad because I didn't even think about all the other puppies.
Yeah, he was so nonchalantly being like, yeah, yes, we just kill him. And she was like, oh, time. But can you spare one? And he's like, oh, I guess I'll spare one. What is it to a man who has a million dogs? I've killed so many. I don't need to kill another
one. Well, this goes into my theory that I don't know that he's always, like, he's a good guy. Like, if he's just cool with killing puppies, like, and his dad's some evil dude, that's who raised him. Maybe he's also some evil dude. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it also might show how willing he is to cut out things that are not useful to him, because that's exactly why he was getting rid of those puppies.
Okay. Deep. Perceptive Kyle.
I think it shows the difference in like nobility and then somebody like Kale, even though they were raised together. Yeah. It's like what he's used to. And like, obviously Kale is somebody who probably would never do that.
Yeah, he would never.
Yeah. I also think it's a little bit in that sense, like, even though Kale is from, like, Aniel, even though he was supposed to be, like, a lord, it's probably a little different than being, like, literally the crown prince of, you know, the realm.
And who knows, maybe it's like a nurture versus nature thing. He was raised on the fact that dogs that were bred a certain way were of no use and they were just animals and you're supposed to get rid of them.
Right.
Maybe that'll be something he changes. He'll start sending runts to like the peasants. I mean, like, you're going to have a puppy instead of outright killing it. Because they are still in a time, like I said, like they're in medieval times. You can't just necessarily be like, I guess I'll keep a dog that I'm going to have to feed and take care of and not gain anything but love from, heaven forbid.
That's kind of how they're treating like the criminals though too, like she keeps making comments about that, like, you know, who would notice, who would care if like they're like the perfect people to target because nobody's going to care if they die, but that fear will seep into the castle or whatever.
Same with the like 500 people that they killed. You know, it's just like, oh, you're in my way. Oh, you have no use to me. And so it's that mindset that makes me skeptical of Dorian.
That's when he got a little real and basically kind of said like he doesn't want to rule this way.
Yeah.
Like his father's doing. Like if he would come into that. Like,
and I want to believe him. I want to believe him so bad. The end of an SJM book is going to be crazy. And I'm just, I don't know that I'm prepared, but, and it's probably not even.
And it's like one.
I know. And from my understanding, this one's from the video we posted about like, is this one going to make me cry? Is this one? And everyone's like, she won't cry until like book three or four or whatever it was. So I'm like, I don't know. Now I'm all worried about it.
That's Sarah J. Massing.
Yeah, it's real.
See, I can't even like look at comments like that because I'm totally the brain where it's like, if someone tells me I'm going to cry, I will not. I will not react according to my actual emotions anymore.
That's how John is. If there's too much hype.
Yeah, there's too much hype.
But honestly, in a way, that's how I felt about the series with Throne of Glass and just being on the internet. Why
you were nervous to get into it.
Yeah, because like everyone's like, it's going to wreck you. It's going to change you forever. You won't get to read any other book the same again and all these things. And I'm just like, okay, well, then I just won't read it.
That sounds terrible. I know. No, thank you.
I don't know how people can say that, though. It's like, that seems so dramatic. It's like, I think this is the greatest fantasy book series I've ever read. But it like, oh, am I just going to stop reading? Like, I'm sure, I know people are exaggerating when they say that. But like, sometimes I feel like they're really not. They're like, I don't know how I'm ever going to read another fantasy book ever again. And then it's just like, just move on. It's a book. As I get worked up in Crescent City 1 and Throne of Glass and my guitar.
Yeah, I've seen some of those videos that haven't been posted yet.
It's just a book. For what it's worth, I think you guys are going to absolutely lose your minds in this book series. In a good way.
I'll never want to read another book.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. In our next episode, we'll be covering Throne of Glass, chapters 36 through 55, bringing us to the end of the first book. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok for all reading updates. And be sure to check out our website for merch, other links, and of course, if you're interested in joining a community and a bunch of other perks that comes with it, please join our Patreon. So we will see you next time.
Bye.
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 Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.